I think the biggest problem right now with the blind community as a whole is that none of us are really truly blind until we go through the system and until society convinces us we are. And once that happens, then pretty much it takes away your hopes, takes away your dreams, and takes away your, you know, your abilities. Don't listen to people tell you that you shouldn't do this or you can't do this because you're blind. I mean, the worst thing that we can do as blind people is not try something out of fear of failure.
Welcome to Blind Abilities. I'm Jeff Thompson. Today we have a very special guest coming from North Carolina, a hiker with a guide dog, hikes trails, has done the Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail, most of the big trails across America, has some big goals coming up this summer. I'd like to introduce you, Trevor Thomas. How are you doing, Trevor?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having us.
Well, thanks, Trevor, for coming on board and sharing your story with us. I have to ask the question, did you hike before you went blind?
That's the million-dollar question. No. I was into pretty much every other extreme sport you can think of before I lost my sight. I've not always been a hiker, and I've not always been blind. I'm going on 10 years being blind, and before that, I started skiing at the age of 3 and took every one of my pursuits, whether it was skiing, snowboarding, mountain biking, skydiving, racing cars, took it to the extreme. And I really, really, when I lost my sight, kind of like everybody else, people told me, you can't do this anymore because you're blind. You can't do that anymore because you're blind. And that was a part of me that I really, really wanted back. I wanted to be able to experience life. And a friend of mine recommended hiking, which seemed a little bit tame, but it was something. So I started hiking and then found out I could take that to its logical extreme. And that's what really got me into it.
Was it your seeking more independence, your own scheduling, and instead of being reliant upon a guide that led you to Tenille?
Yes. When I started hiking, my first trek was the AT. And I did that 18 months after going blind, simply because I wanted my life back, like everybody else. I wanted to, that for me, I don't know, to this day, I don't know what possessed me, but that was the thing that I chose was going to be my stepping off point. I was going to, if I convinced myself that if I could do that, then I'd be able to do anything as a blind person. And I found out after I did that, that I still hadn't achieved my goals. I needed to continue hiking until I could do things without the aid of having a human guide, having a partner, having a team. I wanted to be fully self-reliant. So I got Tenille, and that's how that came about.
Trevor, I know a lot of people who have guide dogs, and they train guide dogs, you know, to find street crossings, cross streets, to find locations. The Appalachian Trail, the AT, is not a typical guide dog routine.
No. Any time you walk off the sidewalk and go onto the trails and go onto the paths, it's totally different for the blind person, and it's also totally different for a dog. In fact, when I expressed interest in getting a guide dog so she could do backcountry work, everyone was skeptical. Most of the schools didn't want to have anything to do with me. They told me that everything from it couldn't be done to they didn't want to do it. They didn't think I should be doing what I was doing. And then there was Guide Dogs for the Blind, who told me they didn't know if it could be done to train a dog to do the kind of work in the backcountry and its work that it would have to do for me in town. But they really thought it was a great way to showcase a dog, and they wanted to try. So I waited a long time, and it's been a lot of extra training, a lot of extra work every day with Tenille to make her do what she does. But it's utterly fascinating, and it's a wonderful, wonderful experience.
So you're using positive reinforcement, the same training that you learned at Guide Dogs for the Blind, with every aspect of training that you do with Tenille.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Positive reinforcement is definitely, in my opinion, the way to go. The dogs, I think we've only cracked just the surface of what they can do, of what kind of jobs that they can perform. They are eager to learn. Of course, most dogs are food motivated and they want to be a part of your pack. So they want to please, and they will, you know, they will do their best to do anything for you.
I was reading in an article how your pack contains a two-man tent, water purification system, cookware, and even Tennille's carrying a three-pound pack with her food and roughware and stuff. What's your day look like? How do you determine camp?
Pretty much a day for me in the backcountry is a lot of not knowing where I am, not because I'm lost, but I call it the world's highest stake game of connect the dots. Because the way I navigate, there's only about five times in any given day that I can tell you definitively, I know where I am. And that's because I have a set of hyper-accurate maps that I have emailed to my iPhone, which talks, that I can refer back to. And then I keep track of my cadence and time, which is cadence is how fast you walk. Time, of course, how long you've been walking. And that will give me distance. So, for instance, Say my directions tell me that 2.5 miles from where I am right now, there's a water source, or there's a trail intersection, or something that I can physically touch. I will keep track of my time and my cadence, and when I get close, then I really, really start to pay attention. I really start to echolocate, pay attention to my surroundings, and then that's where Tennille comes in. Beyond finding me the things like rocks and roots and blowdowns and tree limbs that are going to hit me in the head, I tell her what it is that I want to find. I say, we have to find a trail crossing. We have to find a road. We have to find a sign. So it's truly an interaction with the two of us. You know, I'm the big picture guy. She's the detail girl. I have to know where we're going. I have to know basically where we are. And then if I need something, she's going to get me the rest of the way to what it is that I need. It's a lot of stepping out beyond your comfort zone, a lot of embracing fear of the unknown and pushing forward, and a lot of little rewards when you find what it is that you know you need to, what you know you need, you're looking for.
That must be something. What was it like the first time, the first 100 yards that you took off the first time with Tennille on a trail?
It was exhilarating because the first time we had it out, in theory, what we were doing could be done. In small practice, it could be done. In the shakedown hikes, we were successful. But when you step out onto a section of trail that is 100% unknown to you, and that section of trail happens to be, say, for instance, 1,000 miles long, you know basically what you're going to encounter, but you don't know everything. So there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of trepidation. But there was exhilaration also, wondering, have we done everything? Have we prepared well enough? What are we going to encounter that we have to overcome on the fly? That was the biggest thing. And then the one thing that was fearful was, if she can do all this stuff for me, if she can successfully work in the backcountry, nobody could tell me what would happen after we spent months and months and months on trail. Would she go back and want to do her street work? That was the unknown that no expert, no trainer, nobody could tell me. So it was 100% a leap of faith.
Right. I've always heard that you got to keep your dog up to snuff. You shouldn't take too long of breaks from doing the routines, but it doesn't seem like you do a specific routine here. I mean, you've been out on the trail anywhere from 1 to 7 months.
Yes. And amazingly enough, I mean, she's gotten to the point, and our relationship has changed. I've had her for 3.5 years now. So as we've grown together as a team, our relationship has changed. Her style of guide work has changed. She's started to realize things that I do not need help with and things that I do. So she's changed what she does there. But just the fact that she can go seamlessly back and forth between putting her harness on and doing street work, or putting her backpack on and it's time to do backcountry work, is just, you know, is just amazing.
So When you talk about doing backcountry work, is that different? Is there a harness involved?
One thing we found that we needed was a way to tell Tennille it's time to go to work, but we needed something that was different than her harness for a couple of reasons. Number one, if I had her harness on, the way we would have to navigate through the trails aren't wide enough for me to walk with her harness on. So physically that was going to be impossible. The second thing is we needed a trigger to tell her that you need to do a different kind of work. Because quite frankly, if she was going to do what she did in town in the backcountry, which would be stop at every surface change, stop at everything that's say 4 inches tall that could trip me, we'd still be walking our first mile. So we came up with a backpack. It has its own harness, which I can put a lead on so she can walk in front of me and I can get the information I need through her lead. But it's still a harness-like thing that says, okay, time to go to work. This isn't fun time. This is work time. And that puts her in a mindset knowing that she's more in control. She's got more ability to think as to what is going to be problematic, what is not going to be problematic. And plus, quite frankly, she's in the woods. She gets to have a little bit more latitude and have a little bit more fun.
So when that pack goes on, she gets excited.
She always loves doing work. She's a very work-oriented dog. She loves having her job. But I do have to say, if she has her choice between harness or backpack, she definitely wants to go to the woods.
Oh, that's really cool. You've talked about going into the grocery store. You continuously train Tennille all the time. Explain the pharmacy, the wine, the different locations.
It started off as a game. I wanted to keep her mind sharp. So we started off at home and I did the basic things that a lot of people do. I taught her the names of all her toys. And I got sick of stepping on Nyla bones when she'd leave them out in the middle of the floor. So I taught her to put her toys away by name. And she did that really, really well. So we started going to we go to a lot of different places. So I told her to find restrooms in all different kinds of places. Then we went to airports and I got sick of not being able to find, say, American or Delta. So I taught her, find the Delta counter, find the American counter. I was like, well, heck, the other thing we do a lot is we go to the grocery store. So why don't I just see if I can't teach her my shopping list? So we started off with things that she could smell, things that she liked. Like I give her bananas. So we'd go to the bananas aisle and I'd say, find bananas. And she would, and find carrots. And then I was like, well, she can do this. Let's try other things that she might not be able to find. So went on and said, okay, I need you to find me, frozen pizzas that's behind a case. So I knew she couldn't smell them. And she would always find them. And then I said, well, why don't we see if you can find brands? So I started to teach her different brands of stuff that I needed. The whole wine thing was a joke because my mom, I go to the store a lot with my mom and I just wanted to embarrass her. So I taught her what wine was, and then I had to give it a name. So I called my mom's wine, her red wine, Swill, and I called her white wine, Ripple. And so I could announce to everybody in the grocery store, because when we go to the store, people follow us around watching this crazy blind guy and his dog find things, on his shopping list. And I did it to my mom. So it's like, okay, Tennille, I need you to find mom's Swill and find her Ripple. And people would get a chuckle out of it.
Nice.
So that's where that came about. And then I was like, well, I got a prescription, so she's got to be able to find me the pharmacy. And so we showed it to her once, and then she would go back there. And it got to the point now, since I do a lot of traveling and I go to a lot of stores and that are not the same stores that we would be used to. Mm-hmm. She will, if I walk into a foreign store and we need to find, say, toothpaste. I'll tell her we need toothpaste and she will start methodically going up and down every aisle until she finds toothpaste. So it's really, really fun. She's not finding something in the same place, the same store every time. She's searching for objects. She's working, she's thinking. And it's fun. And I think all the dogs can do it.
So did you have a dog, I mean, not a guide dog, obviously, before, earlier in your life, were you friendly to dogs, animals, that type of thing?
I've always been an animal person. I had cats in college. I had dogs when I was younger. After I got out of college, I had a dog. Quite frankly, I wanted a guide dog from the second I went blind. But I found out there are a lot of regulations involved, namely the ones that I didn't qualify for, which were for the first 6 months after you get a guide, you can't do any traveling, so you can develop that bond and that relationship. Don't make any life-changing decisions like moving. And for the first 5 years I was blind, I was on trail most of the time, so I couldn't have one. And then it became a need. When I needed to go solo in places where there was going to be no ability to find any kind of human help if I ran into it, and I didn't want to rely on a partner any longer, then it became a need. So I made the sacrifice. I adjusted my schedule and went through the process.
And you don't regret that at all?
She is, I would say, probably the best decision I have ever made since going blind was getting her.
Wow. That's really neat that guide dogs for the blind in San Rafael were so optimistic about you seeking a guide dog for hiking.
They took a huge chance on me. I mean, things could have gone horribly wrong, realistically, and that could have really, really damaged their reputation. They saw promise, they saw opportunity where other people saw the possibility for failure. And they've been incredibly supportive, and it's been a really, really great partnership. And I feel very fortunate that I ended up at that school.
All the training that you're doing now, it's like a game. You call it a game, but it's actually a near science.
I guess it is kind of a science. I know Tennille's vocabulary is up to about 500 words now, and she hasn't stopped learning. And I think the biggest thing that GDB taught me was, since I needed these additional skills and I couldn't get that in the short period of time that you're at school learning all the other things you need to learn, is that they sat down and they taught me the psychology of dogs. They taught me basically how dogs learn, why dogs learn, what makes them want to learn. So I could go out and teach Tennille new skills as they were needed. And that's what's made my relationship with Tennille different than a lot of other people, is I've embraced it. And I've just, out of necessity, partly because of what I do, and simply out of wanting to develop the bond and the relationship with Tennille, I've continued it through every aspect of life that we have together, is to make sure that she continues to learn.
When you're not on the trail, what kind of training do you do with Tennille?
We like to do, depending on our schedule, obviously, we like to at least do 10 miles a day. And the 10 miles that we will do in town is a combination of street and trail work. We'll always keep all her skills, all the skills that you would learn in class, everyday types of things. We'll do that every week through just normal being out and about and things like that. But I think probably the most important thing that I do is I search for environments. I search for opportunities that are going to be foreign to me and foreign to her, so we can develop our skills together.
Well, that's really cool. So here we are, summer's approaching. You and Tennille got big plans for the summer?
Always, always we have plans for our hiking. We are getting ready for our first shakedown hike of the year. That's a shakedown hike for us is preparation hikes. That's where we go out and we take our new gear and make sure everything's going to work before we go out on long distance. So we've got one of those coming up in Virginia in about a week and a half. And then before I can even go on trail, we have a couple of events with my foundation. Then it's time to hit the trail for most of the summer. So we will be starting off in Colorado, and we'll be doing a solo on what is called the Collegiate Loop. It's 186 miles at high altitude in the Sawatch Mountain Range in Colorado. and we'll be attempting to summit 8 14,000, what we call 14ers, which are peaks in excess of 14,000 feet. And after we finish that, we're going to go jump on a plane and go directly to California. And we'll be starting with a solo summit attempt on Mount Whitney, which is right around 15,000 feet tall. So hopefully, if we're successful on that, that will be a new altitude record for Tennille and I working together, and a new altitude record for a blind person working with an active guide. And then we will go from there to do a solo on the John Muir Trail, which is 211 miles from Mount Whitney in California all the way up to the Yosemite Valley.
John Muir, that's where you first started out with Tennille.
I first started out with Tennille. It was after I did the John Muir Trail, and I did that with a team. But I first started with her on the Long Trail in North Carolina. Then we went on from there to do a couple of more East Coast hikes, the Benton McKay and the mountains to see. And then our first trip out west was to Tahoe. And following that, we went to Colorado. And that's, Colorado was so wonderful to us. That's the reason why we're starting there again this year.
You mentioned your foundation.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your foundation?
My foundation is called Team Farsight Foundation. It was named after my original hiking team that I had when I did the PCT. And what I do is we provide outdoor backcountry experiences to blind kids. We want to get them out in the backcountry and give them the types of experiences that I've had, because I'm a firm believer that they're going to give them the type of confidence they're going to need to be competitive in everyday life, and not just in the community for the blind, but in the community as a whole. I want to get the kids out from the adaptive, encapsulated environments that they're used to being in, and I want to prepare them so they can adapt themselves to life in the world, as opposed to expecting the world to be adaptive for them.
And how can someone get a hold of Team Farsight Foundation?
They can contact us, of course, go to our website. It's farsightfoundation.org. They can find us on Facebook at Team Farsight Foundation Incorporated.
I think that's really great. That's something so many kids don't think they can get off the sidewalk, basically.
Exactly. It's really, really sad. And I think the biggest problem right now with the blind community as a whole is that none of us are really truly blind until we go through the system and until society convinces us we are. And once that happens, then pretty much it takes away your hopes, takes away your dreams, and takes away your, you know, your abilities.
Well, that's quite the statement. It's true.
It's sad, but it's true. So hopefully by what I do, we can convince people that the sighted world is not always right in telling us how we should live our lives.
Tell us a little bit about Mount Whitney.
Whitney is the tallest mountain in the contiguous United States.
That's nearly 3 miles high.
Yep, that it is.
Wow. Trevor, I'm sure there's some listeners that are interested in challenging their perceptions of what they can do, getting up into the back hills and, you know, getting into hiking. Do you have some words of advice for them?
I think the biggest thing when hiking, when, you know, for a blind person, if you want to go out and you want to hike, whether it be if you have a dog or if you don't have a dog, is to just go out and do it. Don't listen to people tell you that you shouldn't do this or you can't do this because you're blind. I mean, the worst thing that we can do as blind people is not try something out of fear of failure. So if you want it, we may have to figure out a different way to do things. We may have to adapt ourselves to an unfamiliar environment, but it can be done. I mean, all we have to do is pretty much choose whatever it is that that is fearful, and embrace that fear. Then you can step outside that, you know, your own personal comfort zone, and then you can grow, and you'd be amazed at what you can achieve.
Yeah. At first you started out saying you take everything to a stream from, oh, skydiving, race car driving, all that. Now hiking with Tennille.
Yeah. And I honestly, I have to say is that of all the of all the crazy, extreme things that I've done in my life, hiking with Tennille is probably the most extreme sport that I've ever done, because my opponent is something that cannot be controlled. You have nature, and it really doesn't care that I'm blind. It doesn't care. It treats me exactly the same as anybody else. So that's, to be able to achieve in the backcountry is a really, really special thing, because nobody gives it to you. You have to earn, and it's harder. So you have to earn every single step is that much more valuable, that much more, I would say that much more of an accomplishment, because you have to work so much harder to get there.
Well, thank you, Trevor, for coming on. And, you know, you've taken hiking to its logical extreme, and, you know, you accepted challenges and you keep putting them out there. And the work that you've done with Tennille, just the training that you've done with Tennille, it's a podcast in itself, you know. So thank you very much. We're very appreciative that you took the time to come on.
Oh, no worries. And feel free to pass on, because I've been getting a lot of people contacting me recently about wanting to get out and hike with their dogs and things like that. Tell people, send me, I'm more than happy to help. Send me a message on Facebook or shoot me an email. And, wherever you want to go can be done. And if you need help getting there, I'm more than happy to help.
And your Facebook is?
Facebook is Trevor Thomas, a.k.a. 00.
There we go. And email?
Email is trevor@blindhiker.trevorthomas.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Trevor.
Well, thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure to talk to Trevor, and I really want to thank him for taking the time out of his busy schedule to share with us his stories and his adventures that he still has ahead of him, the challenges of Mount Whitney. So follow him on Facebook, because I'm sure there's a lot more backcountry Trevor and Tennille will be bringing to us. Such a great partnership, making such great adventures.
When we share
what we see through each other's eyes,
we can then begin to bridge the gap between the limited expectations and the reality of blind abilities.
For more podcasts with a blindness perspective, check us out on the web at www.blindabilities.com, on Twitter @blindabilities, download our app from the App Store, Blind Abilities, that's two words, or send us an email at info@blindabilities.com. Thanks for listening.